You're listening to Esprit Radio.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
That's right. Welcome to our neighborhood. Welcome to Black on Black Crime, our point counterpoint program where we talk issues, news. Sometimes we play a game or two, but we don't do crime. If you're not familiar with our program, Black on Black Crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze other black people in areas they won't consider anyone else. You can join in on today's topic by calling in or sending your comments in the chat room. With that being said, on with the show. I would like to welcome you again to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. It is Black History Month. So this show, I like to usually keep it kind of light on the show, but on this show, Keisha Cole versus the Destiny Child Super Bowl performance of Michelle Williams, one of the members of Destiny Child. We're going to talk about that. We also have the controversial Lifetime movie, Betty and Coretta. Now, this was a lot. There was a lot of heat around this on another show. Ask Kathleen on Sunday night, 8 p.m. on ACN Network. But we talked about this. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to add this to Black on Black Crime. We're not talking about this early, but we're going to talk about the controversy in the movie Betty and Coretta. We also have our regular news entertainment stuff that we're going to talk about. But first, I want to tell you, in case you missed last week's program, our main topic was scandal versus deception. We didn't know which one of those two was a crime against black men, but we started that new segment with Daniel, Kathleen, and Kai. We kind of ran through the subject, so you might want to catch that out in the archives. Also, Joe Jackson's comments on spanking. We had some entertainment updates as well. And we talked about the movie Uncle Ruckus, the Aaron McGruger movie. So we had all of those things going on last week. But if you want to check it out in the archives, or you can send us a comment or ideas about the show to bobc@soulofsyracuse.com. You can check that out at espriradio.soulofsyracuse.com if you want to check out any of our shows in the archives. Now, our number today is 909-265-9189. 909-265-9189. Want to bring today's partner in crime, and I know everybody's going to come in at their own time, but Daniel is hanging out with us today. How you doing, brother Daniel?
I'm doing all right, sir. And yourself?
I'm good. How was your weekend, man?
It was good. Very relaxing, uplifting, motivating.
Oh,
all of the above.
We had snow on the northeast, so it was kind of a had a snow event. Didn't really affect us. We had about 24 inches of snow last week or something. It was gone in like a day. Like, that stuff don't really, that don't move us. It was the people who were in Connecticut shut them down like they had never seen snow before. But here, we see snow. They plow the roads. The sun is out. Driveways plow. We're fine. The thing I can't get over. Oh, yeah. That was nothing for us. It was them. So in the New York City area, I know a lot of plows from this area went down to help them out on Long Island and those other areas, but they really did have it bad. It shut them down, a lot of accidents. But people who don't have snow, they don't realize that you cannot speed in snow. Like, there's no recovering once you turn your wheel too sharp. I don't care what you do. Step on the gas, slam on the brakes. You are going in the direction and the momentum of your car. So you're never supposed to speed like you don't have any sense. And so people who don't have snow usually go, oh, I can take this corner. I got nice tires on this ride. It's a new car. And they end up in a ditch. That was just my
This is a foreign conversation for me being from Houston, so
I'll
just have to take your word for it.
Well, okay, just look at it like this in Houston. You guys get a lot of rain. But everybody should know, your car hydroplanes at about 30 miles an hour, 30, 35. So if you have really wet roads, you have a lot of accidents. Well, imagine that at ice.
Well,
you don't really need to get that, need to have that kind of speed.
Well, I can identify with that because we talk about it all the time when people drive in rain and they drive like as if, oh, you know, I can drive 70, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like it's dry outside.
Right.
Yeah. So we do have that. So we do have some nuts driving. But before we carry on with the show, let me do a Black History Month profile. This is Black History Month, so out of respect for that, I had something a little bit more passive-aggressive on Black history. But we're going to talk about John Dove, the physicist, later. He is the Black man who has the patent on the laser light technology for, you know, CD players, DVR, that kind of thing. He invented it in 1968. And he passed away. I have a bad sense when people pass away that I know, and I actually knew John Dove for a little bit later on in his life. And cool people, he had that technology patented in 68. I thought, you were around in 68, like doing that kind of work? But obviously he did. And it's a good and bad story. For him, there was no bitterness in him. He said some people paid him. Sony and those guys wouldn't. He had to sue. Of course, J. Edgar Hoover locked him up, put him under the hot lights for a few days, asked him what country was he working for, just because a Black man had a patent on that type of technology in the 60s, in the late 60s. Mm. And he said, he told me this in private, but when he spoke to kids and spoke at events, he never talked about that stuff. Just as adults, I want to tell you, I don't care how smart you are, I don't care what area you cruise in life as Black folks, we will get drug in there, you know, when you have great discoveries. And he, you know what, they didn't want to pay him. He went to the patent office. They actually stole it. And the head of the patent office in court said to the judge, a Black man should not have this technology all to himself when he can help the rest of the world. And the judge said, that's what a patent is, and gave him his patent. Can you believe that? Well, anyway, and he told me that firsthand. His daughter is listening, or anybody who actually knows him is listening, because I can get in contact with him. She's in California, but we probably should bring her in to talk about her father. But that was just a different side note on Black history. And I actually went into the store, and I didn't think I was going to. Now, Huey Newton, there's a reason why I'm going to the Huey Newton story, because Huey P. Newton, or Dr. Huey Percy Newton, was born on February 17th, 1942. He was the co-founder and leader of the Black Panther Party, an internationalist organization is how they wrote it, that promoted racial equality that he helped start in October 1966. Newton was born to Amelia and Walter Newton, who was a minister. He was the seventh and the youngest child in his family. While at Oakland City College, Newton became actively involved in politics in the Bay Area. He joined the Afro-American Association, became a member of Phi Beta Sigma fraternity, and he played a role in instituting the first Black history course in his college curriculum. He read works from Frantz Fanon, Malcolm X, Che Guevara, and during his time at Oakland City College, Newton, along with his friend Bobby Seals, who is now a congressman, Bobby Seals, mind you, organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense in October 1966. Seal assumed the role of chairman, while Newton gave himself the title of Minister of Defense. So just thought we'd share that in the Black History moment to start the program and to welcome everyone to Black on Black Crime. Our number here is 909-265-9189. And while I'm at it, I'm going to bring in another partner in crime. We're going to bring in Low Key. Low Key, how you doing, brother?
I'm all right. What's going on, folks?
Good. We are with Daniel from Houston. So you guys have never met. For some reason, every other show, one of y'all will be here. So I just want to introduce my people.
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Great.
How you doing, Loki? Feeling better?
I'm all right, man. I'm, you know, still out for a little while, but I'm all right.
Okay. Before I have to take our first public service announcement and break, I figure I'd start off with this story. First of all, let me go back to what our topics are today. Our main topic is going to be Keyssa Coles versus Michelle Williams from Destiny Child. She made some critiques. And I just want to ask, is that a Black-on-Black crime? So we will talk about that later. We're going to talk about the controversial Lifetime movie, Betty and Coretta. I have a lot of information on this one, so we're going to tackle that late because the show is going to take a different direction when we talk about that. That's going to get kind of ugly. but before we get started, do you remember there was a story last week or the week before where Arizona Cardinal defensive, I think he's a defensive end, Darnell Dockett, he was kind of criticized by the former Florida State quarterback, Chris Rex. He's a coach now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Remember that story?
Yeah.
Did you hear it? All right, Daniel. Do you remember the story at all?
Not familiar with it.
Okay. So here's the story, because I think that, never mind. All right. So former Florida State quarterback Chris Rex went on a radio show, I think it was ESPN Radio, insinuated that former teammate, current Arizona Cardinal defensive end Darnell Dockett is gay. All because Dockett spent too much time hanging out in the dorm rooms with other guys. This is what Rick said. He said he's a humble, quiet guy. He's got a girl, and he's got a ring. I don't know what that meant, but I wouldn't think that he would need to do that. And I don't know what he did to say this, but he said, I gave him a little credit for standing up for himself, but there were all these jokes about Darnell and what his preference was in college. So if I might, because there was a few incidences of him hanging out with some dudes in the union and stuff. And Rick sent out a half apology later saying he went somewhere he shouldn't have gone. Now, this got a black. Wait, it gets better. Because you know what's going to happen. This is a big guy. He's a defensive end.
Yeah.
So Dockett took to Twitter, and he said, at Coach Rick, so that's R-I-X, he said, F-U-B, I heard you lying on me. No one likes your sorry, but anyway, he was A. When I see you, I am whooping your ass on everything I love.
Okay. Man, that's one thing you don't touch, bro. You don't go there, man.
You know what? Football is testosterone, buddy. And so I know he was the quarterback, and he was like, well, he's hanging out with a bunch of guys, but if you don't know black folks hang out with guys. It's kind of how we roll in public and in private. In college, you go see your girl. We all hung out going to parties with our boys, even though
right.
We probably were seeing somebody. He said, well, he spent a lot of time in the dorm room and hanging out with guys, so. And he said that about.
I think he don't, you know, this dude, he didn't
down.
Have no real basis for the comment. But he made the comment. But like you said, he's not used to dealing with brothers that come at him.
Yeah, he is going to have a problem when he sees that cat.
Don't be mad, Chris, because you don't have any friends.
Right.
You don't have any boys. You have a crew.
Look, like I said, I don't know what was on his mind, but when I saw the story, and when he said that, it reminds me of that joke that says, when you see a black person say, on everything I love, you just want go. Because he is not playing with you. He's not going
right.
to have a. He's not going to want to have a sit down. Not going to want to talk.
Whether he is or not, it wasn't for him.
Well, the funny thing is, he was saying he's a quiet guy, he's a nice guy, and he's got a girl. Like he's saying, oh no, we know he had a girl and he was quiet and humble, but it was kind of suspicious that he was hanging out with so many guys. And it's like, man. Just for you people listening, if you want to roll up on somebody like that, you're going to find out how people are when you call them out. Like, it's not an issue of him being gay or not. This guy doesn't even know him, apparently, and said, well, that's what I heard. You can't get away with that. So, by the way,
you should have somebody around and saying, man, hey, Doc is in the building, man. Hi. Wherever you need.
He better hire somebody. And by the way, Dockett did, you know, have some more tweets after that, and he erased them all. But before he erased them, we at least got to that one. I'm telling you, that's going to be serious. So I'm not going to even feel sorry for this kid, Chris Rick. I'm sorry.
Rick is down.
I am not feeling
get
sorry
him
for
me.
Him.
Get him off me.
It's like you better call somebody. That's all I'm gonna say because he is not playing with you. So, just in case you didn't hear the story, I just thought, man.
I mean, you know, he accused the guy of hanging out with dudes, and well, you all know this is what they do now. They hang out, play games, you know, video games. What is it? Madden and whatever else, stuff we didn't
yeah,
really,
Xbox,
you know,
and all that, man.
It was out and about, but this is new. This is what they do. And all of a sudden, because he did that, there's some questionable activity.
Yeah, I said this before a long time ago. Is what happens with sports, and I know everybody's kind of neutral with this metrosexual stuff, and everybody's kind of neutral about it, but I kept saying guys in very highly testosterone-driven areas, you have to be careful with folks because, you know, a pack of guys don't really play. I mean, you think – I know girls are really mean in packs of girls when they're young, but guys are nothing to play with, so you don't want to do that. Luckily, he's not around that kid now or the defensive end. Lucky he's not around him now because it would not be pretty. Now, he may back off of him because he's plays for the Cardinals or something, but he's going to have a problem. So just watch out for that breaking news story. And he's going to have to stay away from him.
Well, I mean, it goes both ways because everybody, even on Twitter, they're all saying, you know, you wouldn't come out that strongly unless you were gay, which I think is a joke because I defend myself or he defends himself like that. Doesn't mean he's gay. I mean, you could come out and be like, and that's the way it was in the 80s, in the early 90s. Somebody makes a comment about you came out strong. But all of a sudden now, in 2013, you come out strong in defense of who you are and your name and what that represents. And you got to be gay to defend yourself like that,
yeah,
you know.
And one of the things that, you know, one of the topics that we're going to talk about later is the Coretta Betty story where Ms. Farrakhan came out and said something. And I was on a show yesterday where, and Ronnie may be here on Kathleen's show, and she said, why would the minister say something if he had nothing to do with it? And I said, you can't do that to black folks. Like, black men don't really get down like that. You can't accuse people of something because what happens is if, when they don't say something, people say, well, he ain't say nothing, right? There's
right.
different cultural, you know what I mean? There's different cultural aspects to how we respond to stuff. So unless you willing to deal with that, you can't just arbitrarily just say stuff like you don't have no sense.
Right. And there's a new topic, you know, and I don't think it's really surfaced hard about gay NFL players. It, you know, and the league doing a lot of work to keep it under wraps, you know. So, you know, I think that should blow up in the next couple of months, too.
Like I said, that whole topic, I never actually deal with that topic because I don't have an opinion on it one way or another.
Mm-hmm,
but
the
trick is, when you start calling people out, then you cannot be mad at what their responses are.
Absolutely.
I always say that when somebody comes and pokes you and says, you know what, I don't like you. I don't care. I don't know what you expect them to do. You can't hit somebody and say, I didn't expect you to hit me back so hard. You can't do that.
Right.
Like, why you hit so hard? You can't arbitrarily say that. So, anyway, on that note, okay. So we're gonna take a break. We'll come back with more Black on Black Crime. You can join us 909-265-9189. Kathleen is gonna be here, and since the ladies aren't here right now, we get to tear up. All right.
Bring it on.
All right. We'll be back after this quick news break. We have to take a public service announcement to Woosah. We'll be back in just a minute.
How many more? How many more street corners?
How many more schools?
How many more movie theaters?
How many more halftime moments of silence?
Enough.
For the children of Sandy Hook Elementary.
Demand a plan.
You can't win without a plan.
I chose the game.
I played the game.
This right here?
Oh, baby, this is not a game.
It's time.
It's time for our leaders to do something.
Demand a plan right now.
Right now.
Now.
Starting Sunday, this coming Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a new show called Professional Style, where we talk about singles, professionals, parents, travel, lifestyle, and living. If you are a professional, if you're single, you're a parent, or whatever your status in life, Professional Style, every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on Ask Kathleen Network.
Welcome to Esprinet News, 90-second news break. This is Black History Month. The number of Americans filing new claims for jobless benefits fell last week, trending near a five-year low of sign that the grinding recovery in the labor market remains on track. Last month's job gains are consistent with the rebounding in home construction. The U.S. Postal Service announced that it will stop delivering first-class mail on Saturday, beginning in August, in a bid to save about $2 billion a year. Parcels will still be delivered. The problem behind the financial difficulties is a mandatory cost for future retirement benefits. The Postal Accountability Act of 2008, under George Bush, made it mandatory that 75 years of pension plan be funded within 10 years. Queen Latifah's successful production company, Flavor Unit, which has produced hits like Bringing Down the House, is teaming up with Netflix for a lucrative multi-year deal. Netflix will have first-look access to content and will be able to stream movies on their services. House of Bodies, starring Terrence Howard, and Percentage, starring Vin Rains, will be out this spring. NBC plans to reboot the series Ironside with veteran actor Blair Underwood. There you have it. I'm Jerome Esprit for Espritnet News on ACN.
Welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. We have Brother Low-Key on with us today and Brother Daniel hanging out, making noise. What's up, fellas?
What's going on? Hey, hey, hey.
Right. Now, our first segment today, we're going to talk about, which one should we do first? We're going to talk about the Keisha Cole versus Destiny Child. Now, since the ladies aren't here, I'm sure they'll have more of an opinion for this, so I'm going to read the news story from it. Now, Keisha Cole took to Twitter, fired some shots at Michelle from Destiny's Child during the Super Bowl 47 halftime show, their performance. Now, for the record, Destiny's Child has not performed together for 7 years. Nevertheless, Keisha decided to tweet, "I think I was frightened to blink for a second, then Michelle sung, and I woke my A up from a daze. She's always effing the groove up." As you can imagine, her Twitter account was on fire after that. Now, Keisha followed up with a tweet claiming that Michelle took some shots at her back in the days, which apparently led to her bitter Twitter rant. But, you know, she said, hey, by the way, the B Michelle says some foul stuff, and she used the S word, while I was performing once, but nobody recalls that. Now, is that like a hate? Now, is that a black on black ride? Just think about it this way. She said she liked Beyonce. She was looking forward to it. She loved the whole show until Michelle came out, and she went hard at her on Twitter. So, Daniel, you can take this one up first. What do you think about this? Now, was that unnecessary black-on-black crime just because she didn't like one girl in the group that she messed up the whole show?
It's just messy. I don't understand this whole Twitter thing. You know, just take it outside, man. If you got problems with people, just meet them somewhere. Like DMX would say, meet me outside. I just don't get it. I mean,
you know,
I understand social media, and it's an opportunity to reach out and touch somebody or to piss them off, but I can't get it. I mean, Michelle, to me, is not the strongest singer in the group,
right?
But she was what they needed when they needed to close ranks and make it a viable group. So, I mean, she does her thing. She does it classy. I don't see the issue.
Right, and obviously.
On the other hand, though, I did see a couple of pieces of Keisha Cole's reality show, and if anybody want to shut it up,
must be mad.
It would be Keisha Cole.
I am not going to even throw a flag on Daniel. That is not a black on black crime, as far as I'm concerned. It's justified. A justified black on black crime. Right, low key.
You know, I don't know. We got a little different opinion here. I said the same thing when you know they were singing, and I looked at it, and my stepson did too. Michelle, who? Like, what?
But she's a part of the group.
Yeah,
you can't just kick Tito out.
Let her back and give her a dress and another wig. Let her sing back up. I'm sorry.
Okay, first of all, okay, I'm throwing a flag on you. Daniel, you was fine on this one. Low-key, on the other hand, has a little bit of hate for that little thin girl that's in
the country. I'm just saying. And since I spent a little time on West Coast, I'm a rep West Coast with Keisha. I don't necessarily agree with her coming out and hitting her because she had an issue with her in the past. If that's the case, keep your issue relevant and keep it out there on Twitter. Don't wait till the Super Bowl and throw it back out there and then try to defend it. If you're going to say something and stand by it. And that's all she had to do. Don't give no explanation. Just say, hey, y'all could have did better without her, whatever. But as far as putting it out there, then Keisha also made the comment about, yeah, my mama on drugs, I'm from Oakland, whatever. It is what it is. But Keisha hold her own ground, you know. When her album come out, she hold her own. So she, you know, as a star, as a singer, you got every right to make a comment about the next person. It is what it is.
Okay.
Take your lumps.
God. Man. Loki's defending the status quo here. So I'm going to give you Michelle's response about her performance. But she didn't really say anything about Keisha in this. She just says, when three good friends get together, you're free, and I don't care who's around. We are just catching up and being goofy. We had a blast. People at home watching, they don't catch the moments before where, like, the Charlie's Angels pose. We were all smiling and laughing with my girls. I don't care what anyone else says. I don't let that get me down. It was a beautiful thing. So her thought was, I don't know what she said to Keisha in the past, but it didn't really sound like she was holding any kind of grudge towards her. And then
make it look good. I mean, you know, obviously
Keisha
could have
made it look good too.
These women have history. No, these women have history, man, and it came out in her Twitter. I mean, I don't get all involved like Manny said. I don't get all involved in all that Twitter and all that crap. But it is what it is. These women have history. If somebody said something, somebody's retaliating it, and so be it. This was a grand stage to retaliate on, and she took advantage of it. You know, it is what it is. This happens every day with these people in this business. And if you notice, Beyonce didn't have a lot to say, and neither did Kelly Rowland.
Right, but she wasn't talking about them. She actually said...
No, it's not that. It ain't about whether she was talking about them. You know, when you're friends with somebody and somebody is dogging your boy, your girl, or whatever, you tend to have a comment. You tend to have something to say. That's your business.
Okay, Loki.
Yeah, Beyonce has that $50 million deal to consider, so she don't want to lie.
Right.
The negativity of negative light in what she's doing.
Yeah.
Whereas Keisha needs the plug, that, and maybe Michelle needs the plug for people to start thinking about him and look at him as relevant.
Right.
Based on their beef.
Right.
And I want to say that's an old school kind of thing. That's how we are, low-key, like, you know, in our generation, Daniel, low-key, and I. That's how we are. So I just want to take this back to an old black-on-black crime show where Nicki Minaj said something about Mariah Carey. And so the brat came out, and she was like, I'm going to whoop Nicki Minaj's butt. Like, she don't know her like that. Right, you can't take it street to her. Right, she was just saying you can't be street with her because she's not approaching you like that. But if you want to approach me like that, that's a whole other stuff. Now we understand that you can't invoke that without invoking other people into your business. So Keisha don't care because that's kind of how she rolls until she got all of her bad internet comments. But before, let's go to some of the internet comments. Now one said Keisha Cole had the nerve to try to call out Michelle when she couldn't even get. She couldn't get a shift at Kmart cover to attend the game. Okay, that was just somebody just being mad at her. Another one said Keisha's treating live from halftime from the ramen noodle bowl, I guess. And the other one said she got her picture. Well, she does. She got her picture on a perm box, and now she don't know how to act. Keisha Cole does have a perm deal. I don't know what that means. People were just being nasty. This was Keisha Cole's Twitter. These are some of the feeds that was on her Twitter. Someone else said, there are more people in her Twitter mentions than ever been to her concerts. And I know. People were getting nasty. I'm saying when you invoke that, you invoking people to be nasty. So, you know, like Loki said.
Being true, though.
Okay, but someone said, I love Destiny Child, but you got to admit, Michelle was a little stiff. However, Keisha should not disrespect Michelle since she's been in the game a lot longer than Keisha, so Michelle gets a pass. That was just another internet comment. So I just want to invite everyone to join. Our calling number is 909-265-9189.
I bet you the other girls from the girls that she replaced in the group, they're cracking up right now. Like, yeah, that's what that get.
See, that is low-key hate. Low-key committing black-on-black crimes. You know what? The commissioner is on the line, but she didn't flag herself in. But I'm sure she feels. Go ahead.
LaToya, go ahead, D. LaToya Luckett and the other girl. Yeah,
she... See, he's wrong because he said the other girl.
I don't know her name.
Okay. You know what? We take no hating on this program. Okay, now see, now y'all did it. Now, I just want to tell you both, and this wasn't me, now y'all did it because the commissioner is now in the lineup.
It wasn't me.
It was you. I heard it.
It was not. Loki and Daniel is having a moment.
Loki
with...
puts down no disclaimers.
All right, Kathleen.
Kelly and Michelle and Beyonce.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we're just saying, did Keisha Coles, did she commit a black-on-black crime by striking
Absolutely.
Out at just one of the people in the group? Because, you know, Twitter is just kind of like putting it in, you know, the AP or UPI feeds now. So you can't just tweet stuff.
Meaning that she should strike out at everybody?
No. She just said that about Michelle.
Yeah, no, you said, did she commit a black-on-black crime by striking out at one of the members of the group? And I was like, what you supposed to do with us, you know, if it was everybody? Never mind.
I forgot she's an
attorney,
people. Yeah. So now she, don't cross-examine me. I'll put you on mute. Don't cross-examine me. Oh, I know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay, so since all of y'all,
was on the stand for a minute.
Look,
clear.
I know. It started getting warm in here and all that good stuff. But check this out. Since Daniel, come on over to this side. Those two are hating today. So here's the thing. Former Destiny Child member, who everybody forgot, Latavia Robinson.
Got it.
Had good things to say about the show. Here's what she said. Obviously, seeing Beyonce perform was the highlight for me. I got a real surprise when both Kelly Rowland and Michelle Williams popped up on stage like that. I thought they all looked great and did a good job with their dance moves. She said Beyonce was especially amazing. She looked fabulous. Her voice was strong, was really strong. During her performance, somebody texted me to say they couldn't hear Kelly and Michelle sing. It was so noisy in the house where we watched the performance. I didn't really notice anything wrong, but who knows? They probably had some technical problems. Now, I watched it on the internet. I saw it live, but I watched it through YouTube, and you can hear them. Their mics were up. It was just pretty much how it went from you being at your Super Bowl party. So there was probably some little technical difficulties, but Latavia said good things about them. And the other girl who y'all remembered didn't say nothing.
I'm sorry, but the comments you just read didn't sound that great. It sounded like she said a lot of great stuff about Beyonce, but she was being politically correct when it came to Kelly and the other lady.
Michelle. They all look great. See, low-key only want to hear what he want to hear. They all look great and did a good job. That's
good job, right.
She said Beyonce was especially
but they did a good job.
she said Beyonce was especially amazing. So it was Beyonce's show. They just came up for a cameo.
Yeah, but when you say things like, look great, did a good job. Come on, retweet.
Where is our commissioner when you need her? Our commissioner is sleeping.
What do you say, Daniel?
No, I'm actually not sleeping. He sounds like, he's of counsel to me. Because it kind of sounds the same. He sounds the same to me.
Oh,
when you did great, when you did a good job. I was like,
Do I have to take a commercial? Because I seem to be losing control.
But I do want to say, and I don't know if this is a black-on-black crime or not, but I was noticing myself that I was straining to hear Kelly and Michelle. And the thing that came up in my head, and I said I wasn't going to say it, but since y'all brought it up.
Lord, blame it
on us.
Seems like their mics are really turned down. And so if there's technical difficulties, it only affected two of the mics. So, just saying.
Okay. It was not a Destiny's Child show. It was Beyonce's halftime performance, which she brought in people. If you told me my cousin was dancing but you couldn't really see her, I don't really feel sorry for you. I didn't see any musicians either.
But if you ask me to be on Black on Black Crime as a commissioner and you leave me on mute,
hey, that's an obstruction of justice.
Right.
Oh, bring the truth,
Touche, you got me on that one.
You know, don't have me out there looking all fantastic and nobody can hear me like I'm lip syncing or something. I'm just saying.
I think we really need to start having production meetings. My bad. I didn't see that coming.
Kelly and Michelle need to have a press conference and sing their part live.
right. This show has turned into one big black on black rant. Okay, you can call in. You can join us because I'm not liking them today. 909-265-9189. If you have any comments in the chat room, send them in. Or you can email us at bobc@soulofsyracuse.com and join in and kind of shut them down a little bit because they seem like they're hating, and I don't know where this is coming from.
We have admitted that she did black on black crime. It was no doubt black on black crime. We're just simply saying that when you say things like they looked great and sounded good, I mean, and you couldn't hear them, so I mean, the sounded good is questionable.
Oh man, and I almost feel like I feel kind of bad for even throwing it under the bus because she committed the crime. You say, yeah, she committed a crime, but she should have stabbed her again. I understand the logic, but I don't understand the logic. So, I just want to remind you, this is Black History Month. Let's keep it strong, people. Stay focused.
You know.
All right, until our next segment, so you can keep it focused for a bit. All right, so I guess we should give the commissioner, okay, so officially we didn't know from your standpoint, did you say it was a black-on-black crime or not?
Yes, Keisha Cole, that was a black-on-black crime.
But we all like Keisha Cole's, apparently, so nobody wants to really throw her under the bus. I'm not throwing her under the bus either, I'm just saying she shouldn't have said it.
Yeah, no, I don't know if she's under the bus or not, but that was a black-on-black crime. I do happen to like Keisha Cole, though, a lot. But that was, you know, that was like a Wendy Williams move, you know? You mess up.
Yeah.
Right.
Throw Wendy Williams under the bus. We don't really care about her. it was a Wendy Williams move.
I just say Keisha Cole, I don't throw her under the bus. It was a black-on-black crime, but, you know, I think Michelle was deserving. I don't know.
You think she's deserving of that crime?
Yeah. I just think you know, they're airing dirty laundry, and Michelle just didn't come back, which is good, which is really good. She didn't come back at her.
I just want to say, you know what, keep your blows above the waist and wait till the ref says break. Like, okay, let's get a fair one in here if we're gonna do that. So now that everybody got me all on the wrong side of this thing, I'm going to do a little something for you. We're going to take a break.
Can we get busy?
And we're going to play no static because I'm tired of them giving all of this static on people. So James Brown is going to try to bring us back into a Black History moment. Okay? All right.
We're sorry.
We'll be quick. Thanks for joining that. This is Black on Black Crime. Jerome, Kathleen, Daniel, Loki.
You can't sing it on the song.
They all giving us that. We'll be right back after this. They all giving us that. All right, we'll be back.
What's better, doing two things at once or just one?
Two.
You sure?
I am absolutely confident.
Two times is awesome. The thing I can do is wave my head and wave.
That's amazing. I've never seen anything like that.
Look, I can do
it. Hold on, I'm watching this. It's not complicated. Doing two things at once is better. And only AT&T's network lets you talk and surf on your iPhone 5.
All right, family photo.
Charlie, stop punching your brother. Derek, stop texting and look at your dad.
I can get to do the
one. Yeah, well, just look at your dad so you can get the shot.
Give me a ninja.
Got it.
What?
Okay, wait, wait, wait.
Yeah, I got it. Come here.
Nobody move, especially you, Charlie.
Let's go.
How'd you do that?
Automagically.
Let's see. Combine pictures with Best Face on the new Samsung Note 2. Available at all major carriers.
Susie is dying to meet you.
Oh, steer clear of Kristen. She can't control herself around chocolate. She'll devour you.
Really?
I'd be a terrible friend if I didn't warn you. Gotta go.
Yeah, thanks for introducing us.
Anything for a friend.
Ooh, strong grip. Ow!
So, you want to grab a bite somewhere?
Here's fine.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Dad, where do babies come from?
Well, there's a planet. It's called Babylandia. That's right, it's filled with babies. Uh-huh, babies of all kinds. And when the time is just right, there's a space launch.
All systems go.
And that, son, is where babies come from.
But Jake said babies are made when mommies and daddies...
You go, play with us on the bus.
Well, we're on the bus, go round and round, round and round, round and round. Wheels on the bus go round and round, all
around. You're white. Start out with a bright future. Then, over time, they become dull and begin to lose their luster. Because washing in the Bargain brand can leave dirt from the wash on your clothes, causing your whites to get dingy. New improved Tide Plus Bleach helps to remove the dirt in one wash to bring your whites back to bright. Turning whitish to wow. Tide Plus Bleach. Style is an option. Clean is not.
Introducing the all-new 2013 Nissan Pathfinder. Hi. It seats 7.
Hi.
Or 2. And with a 13-speaker Bose sound system and newly redesigned exterior, you'll go everywhere in style.
Hi.
And Pathfinder's tri-zone entertainment system.
My movie just ended.
Ours too.
Keeps everyone entertained. The all-new Nissan Pathfinder. It's our most innovative Pathfinder ever.
Hey, welcome back to Black on Black Crime. I'm your host, Jerome. You can join us at 909-265-9189. That's 909-265-9189. Since we're talking about freedom today, I thought I would give us a bump that kind of brings us back in the mood. We have Daniel on the line, we have Loki, and we have our commissioner, Kathleen.
Hey. I just wanted to say that the Tide commercial sounded like a black on black crime. When I first heard that, it's like, you're white. And you do. Oh, what? Did anybody okay. else hear that?
See, that's what I get for not muting people. Let me tell you what's a black on black crime.
Did the Tide commercial start out like that? It's like, you're white. And then all of a sudden, you start getting, you start losing your brightness.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
It took me a while to figure out they were talking about clothes when they finally said Tide. But anyway, okay, I'm sorry, Jerome.
You are really downgrading the program. I don't know where that came from. It's just like.
See, the commission's a little hyper-vigilant.
Tide didn't do anything. It's Black history. Come on now, stay with us. Now, before we go into our next segment, since we did the Django Unsung thing, I don't know if you guys saw the Roots folks, speaking of Wendy Williams, the cast of Roots on Wendy Williams. Did you guys see that? I think Loki,
no.
Did you see it?
Mm-mm.
Okay, neither one. And Kathleen, you saw it, right?
Yes, I saw it.
Okay. Quentin Tarantino, you know Wendy Williams being messy and all. She brings the Roots on because it's Roots anniversary. And she brings the cast on, you know, Ben Vereen, Leslie Uggams, LeVar Burton, Lou Gossett Jr. And she asked some questions, and they were positive. Lou Gossett said, yeah, I saw Django. It was a movie about this, and it would seem like a good script, and blah, blah, blah. Right? Lou Gossett did. Everybody else said, no, I didn't see it. So Wendy does this. So here's Quentin Tarantino's quote about Roots. When you look at Roots, nothing about it rings true in storytelling. None of the performances ring true for me either. I didn't see it when it first came on. But when I did, I couldn't get over the oversimplification they made about everything about that time. It didn't move me because it claimed to be something it wasn't. Before you guys jump into this, here's Ben Vereen's statement. This is real.
Hey, mother.
No, that's not what Ben Vereen said. That's what he was thinking. But that's not what he said. He said, I should read the football player's quote. When I see you on everything I love. I'm sorry. We'll go back to that one. Now, Ben Vereen said, this is real. That's fantasy. That's his side of the street. This is our side of the street. Roots stand on its own. LeVar Burton said, he makes stories that are adolescent fantasies on steroids. He should work his side of the street. We should stay on ours. Leslie Uggam said, you can't touch this. We are telling our black stories, and he ain't black. I love Leslie Uggams. And Lou Gossett said, who saw Django, said, there were too many N-words for me in Django. He was doing it for publicity. If you want to talk about how the West was, there are a lot of directions you can go in. Nat Turner, Deadwood Dick, who was a sheriff, and Bess Reeves, who was the most successful sheriff in the West. So Lou Gossett said he must have been crazy. So for all of those people who defended Quentin Tarantino, I want to know what you guys think. Low-key, well, I'll let you take this first. What do you think about what Quentin Tarantino said about Roots?
Hey, you know, the first show we did and we talked about that, who had, you know, I'm got to just bleep myself here, you know. Who made him any kind of professional person able to comment on what Roots did for anybody? I mean, you know, that's a joke to me in the first place, him being able to comment on it and it getting any publicity. You know, I still haven't seen the movie. You know, and I think about it, what Lou Gossett is saying about how many times the N-word is used in it. And I got to tell you, I saw a play this weekend, and I think they used the N-word more. So,
But Lou Gossett was saying for his age, for his taste, he said it was used for shock. And you know, Lou Gossett, I don't know how old he is. What is he, 70?
I don't know what gave him the hood pass where he can make the comments he's made. You know, because his mom's up with Will Chamberlain. I don't know.
And you know what's funny about that is, as people defend him, the people like Jamie Foxx or Kerry Washington, he feels like he can say more and more stuff. I don't know why. He doesn't know. Black people will step away from you and be like, "You, I was with you until you did that, and now I'm done." You know.
Well, I mean, I think he should have stopped with making the movie and dealt with that and the topics that he was covering in the movie and brought that forth and talked about that more rather than go making comments about Roots and then the, you know, the portable dials and the, you know, leave all that alone. You want to give your movie credibility? Just stick to talking about your movie and the issues you covered in your movie. I mean, you know.
But when he's on a publicity tour, this is where he's saying all of this stuff. He didn't say it when he was making it. He didn't talk to the actors and say, you Negroes are crazy. Like, he didn't go through all of that. He did it on his publicity tour. So now behind everybody's back, the white man is now saying, I don't respect none of you Negroes. I see it this way. Y'all wasn't authentic to how your experience is about slavery. But mine is a little bit more authentic and real because I did. I studied this. Daniel, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I've been over here steaming.
I know you were a little quiet.
How you going to attack the movie that brought the consciousness of the black man, woman, to understanding from whence we came? And then to say you've never watched the movie? Well, I'm flabbergasted. I'll use a term that's probably not used much in our community, but how can he say such a thing when historically you can look at that movie and say that these are how things happen? You say oversimplification? I mean, the movie was, what, 2 weeks long?
Right.
So I think it went into very good detail about the relationship between and amongst the slaves and the masters and I can't understand why you would say something like that to slap African Americans in the face when you're supposedly trying to make a movie to bring to the forefront the challenges that slaves faced during that time frame. I mean, I don't understand where he's coming from. Maybe he's smelling his own, you know, like my mom used to say, you're smelling your own, you know what. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But now he thinks he's all that, and he's popping his collar, and he's popping right at the mouth, and he's about to piss off a lot of people. And now I'm not happy that I want to see the movie.
Right, because he did cross the line on this, and that just shows. And I thought he crossed the line when he made the slave dolls and called them action figures. They were posable dolls, like you can move them and stuff. Like, what's your motivation for making, you know, arms and hips and stuff bent with a slave doll? What's your motivation for making a slave
because
dial?
Because he believes he can do whatever he wants to do and say what he wants to say, which, I mean, you know, by justifying half the stuff he's done, we give him credibility. Right? And that like Dee says, I just, flabbergasted is the right word.
Right. And Kathleen, I know we talked about this before. I don't know if what your thoughts are on this.
That Roots wasn't authentic?
Yeah. He said nothing rings true about the storytelling. None of the performances ring true either. I didn't see it when it first came on, but when I did, I couldn't get over how oversimplified they made everything about that time. I didn't move. He said it didn't move me because it claimed to be something it wasn't. That is.
He's looking at it 37 years later. This came out like 76.
Exactly.
Right. Your perspective is all blown.
What rings true about Petticoat Junction? Like, who cares? Andy Griffin wasn't true. If you look at that stuff from back then, you're like, none of that rings true today. So he just watched it recently. He's saying, oh, yeah, that wasn't authentic.
Yeah, 1976, that was as real as it could get.
Exactly.
You need to let the commissioner finish her comment, or I'm going to have to flag y'all for her.
No.
I'm sorry, y'all.
I didn't know if she was busy. Go ahead.
No. I'm here. And the thing that, there's a couple things that bother me about his comment. And one is, I need you all to help me with this. I don't know if he's trying to say that Django was supposed to be authentic. I know it's supposed to be like a dark comedy or something like that, so I don't know where he's going with that. My problem with that is because, I'm sorry, that's my website making noise. Let me move away. My problem with it is that Roots is a staple in the Black community. So people from, you know, historians, everybody in the Black community was ecstatic about Roots when it came out. And it has become a classic for the Black community. It is something that we use to educate our children about the slave experience in America. It has, you know, for years and years and years, this is something that we've looked to. We stopped our families every day to sit down and watch this as a, you know, as a community. And for him to come now and say that, you know, to diminish the value of Roots to the upcoming generations who are now watching something like Django, that's to me, you know, it's a very serious problem, I think. Because if there are young people that are fans of Jamie Foxx, or much younger, let's say, you know, 13 and so forth, that are fans of Jamie Foxx, or younger people who are not getting an adequate picture of Black history in America, and they hear some comments like that, or they begin to think that, oh, Django is what really happened, so, you know, we don't need affirmative action. It just kind of takes on a whole life of its
right.
own. So I think he needs to be stopped in his tracks with that one. And more people need to stand up and make a comment to Quentin Tarantino about how ridiculous what he's saying is and the impact of it. What he did was fantasy, you know, in comparison to Roots. So, you know, it's problematic to me, and it indicates even more that there's the possibility that the people who are standing behind him are there for a particular reason, you know, and I don't want to call out what that reason might be.
Who cares?
You know, well, money. I'm assuming just money.
Probably money.
You know, because he's, you know, he is an accomplished producer, screenwriter, whatever.
And public policy, too.
Let's say for what it is, Quentin Tarantino does not have a problem financing his movies. So you can get paid doing a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Well, yeah, well, I did say, I said money. So
right, but
if
I wouldn't put anything else on that. I would just say he does not
have
problems.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Right.
Okay, right. So did they want to be in line to star in the next film or have him call them and whatever else, you know, because he's insulted, I think, a couple of black male actors who mentioned that they might have been in line for the lead role in this, if it was a lead role. You know, but anyway, so I think it's pretty detrimental, and I really do think he needs to be called out even more about that comment, about a lot of the stuff that happened in that movie.
Right, and during the time that, you know, everybody was jumping on Spike Lee for saying what he said about Quentin Tarantino, Spike Lee said nothing about the N-word. He said something about Quentin Tarantino, and everybody brought up the N-word stuff on Spike Lee. He said nothing about it. And Alan Hughes of the Hughes Brothers, or Albert Hughes, one of the two, came out and just said, I know Quentin Tarantino, and I charged him up about that. He said, I haven't talked to him in years, but somebody needs to check him on that. And I suggest that the people who know him tell him, you don't know black people like that. That's what Alan Hughes said in being interviewed, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, about Django. I know, Daniel, I think you were trying to say something.
No, I'm just saying that if you want to look at it from a public policy standpoint, we're trying to, in effect, whitewash the slavery experience and make it seem like we had these brothers riding around like cowboys and winning up in against all odds versus the man and riding off into the sunset. That's not true.
Right.
You had a lot of damage done to African Americans through the slavery experiences, and it persists today. So don't think that it was all, you know, guts and glory for the black man at the end of the, you know, beating the white slave master, shooting up the whole house and all that.
Oh, yeah, really. Come on, man. And riding off into the sunset with his wife on horses, like, you know, nobody's looking and nobody's going to stop him, you know. And then the other thing that troubled me about the movie at the end, right, they did a terrific job. Well, Sam Jackson, of course, always is, you know, he's a great actor. But he does such a terrific job of making you hate him that people are ecstatic about the fact that Jamie Foxx kills Sam Jackson at the end. And that just, like, you know, I'm like, ew, there's so much wrong with this movie. It's just, you know, it's a huge turnoff, right?
What it showed is that the older black male was so beholden to the white slave master that now he was more important than his own kind. So in a way, he was like the house Negro versus Django. So I can understand how some people would be elated that Django would win versus a person of that mindset.
You know, this is like a recurring nightmare for us as a community. Now, I'm almost like, I'm like Daniel now. I'm kind of like in a different space because of this. We start to ingest this stuff very differently. You can start off having fun with that, and that's just a movie and whatever. But whatever solidifies in your mind is how you project out to everybody else. So in our next story, we're going to talk about this Coretta Betty movie, and I'm not going to take a break before we talk about it, but the one thing about that is the same thing. We're correcting history. But before I go into that, I want to say you're listening to Black on Black Crime. I'll call in numbers 909-265-9189. You can call in, you can join us, or you can call in just to listen. During the week, you can send us an email at bobc@soulofsyracuse.com, or you can check us out in the archives at espriradio.soulofsyracuse.com, or if you want us to send you a link to any particular show, just send us an email and we'll get to it. Now, as far as correcting some history, I just want to say this, Black History Month, we should correct this. Author, activist, musician, artist, film producer Sista Soulja, Lisa Williamson, has her latest book out. I thought it was interesting. She spoke at Temple University. Will Smith came to support her. She had a book signing. The book is called A Deeper Love Inside, The Portia Santiago Story, a coming-of-age tale about a girl who was a natural-born hustler, which is said to be marching off the shelves. I guess it's going pretty well. Sista Soulja has been executive director of Daddy's House, a social program, a nonprofit corporation for urban youth financed by P. Diddy and Bad Boy. Following though, you know, Sister Soldier, that whole Sister Soldier moment with Bill Clinton that everybody seems to love to talk about, I just want to tell you what that is. The Sister Soldier moment was when Sister Soldier came out and said, following the Rodney King verdict, black people kill black people every day. Why don't they just take a week off and kill white folks? And that's what her comment was, but it's kind of taken out of context. What she's saying is that the response would be different if black people started focusing their energy on something else. So black people never stood up to Bill Clinton for acting like she was talking about killing white folks herself. So the whole Sister Soldier moment is a black history moment taken out of context to begin with. So she is living in white folks' infamy for being a Black Panther kind of thing, where she was making a statement that kind of took a life of its own in politics. So I want to make sure I mention that her book's out, and she's a, you know, she's moved a lot of books before. This is not her first book, but it's A Deeper Love Inside, Sister Soldier. I'm not sure if you guys heard about that, so I want to make sure I put that out. Are you familiar with it? Anyone? Anyone? Must have met
back in the day.
Yes, I am. I am familiar.
Absolutely,
I'm familiar. You mean the issue with Bill Clinton, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
Trying to ruin her career.
Well, yeah, it would ruin her career as far as how the music industry treats you when everybody else treats you one way, but it won't ruin your career as far as sales if you put something out hot in the black community. We don't really roll like that. You can call anybody a name that you want to, but we don't really adhere to public opinion, hence, I'm not going to throw. That would be a black on black crime. I'm not going to even name anybody. It hit me and it left as soon as I did that, because I want to go into our main, well, not our main topic, but a topic today of the controversy from the Lifetime movie Betty and Coretta. Last night on Professional Style, Kathleen Williams show on Sundays at 8 p.m. on the ACN network, Kathleen and her co-host Ronnie, Kathleen not so much, but Ronnie kind of defended this movie because she saw it, the Lifetime show. And if you're not familiar, the new film Betty and Coretta explores the lives of two icons, is how they describe it, Betty Shabazz and Coretta Scott King. The film, Mary J. Blige plays Shabazz, states that she believes that Minister Faircon has something to do with the death of Malcolm X. Now, the film has been attacked by her daughters, both Betty Shabazz's daughters and Coretta Scott King's daughters, who said their mothers were not properly represented. And also, come to find out, they never even reviewed it until after the fact. The producers let them see it. So none of the family was happy about this. But from a lot of the internet comments, I've looked at a lot of stories on this just from yesterday. And people are hot about the fact that nobody black was in the production as far as producing and creating this movie. Then, so the question is, why is Lifetime motivated in rehashing something and pointing the finger with no black people in the room? Again, same thing Quentin Tarantino, but with no black people in the room, they made sure that they kept outing and pointing at Minister Farrakhan. Now, Minister Farrakhan responded in the final call. He was asked, what do you think about those at Lifetime who created this movie to open up old wounds about Malcolm X's murder? And Minister said, it is because the murderer of Malcolm X is still alive in the hearts and minds of many, and they wish to charge me with the crime in order to seek and destroy my reputation with the people that love and admire me, and also to plant a seed in the heart of those who don't know me and who don't know who I am. In fact, they want to point him as a murderer, right? Now, murders don't have a statute of limitations, by the way. So just from them making that insinuation, that was a problem. Now, in answering the question about Mary J. Blige's motives, he said, when a person is famous or well-known, sometimes that such person executive producer status to add strength to the film. Mr. Farrakhan said, Mary J. Blige is a friend, and nothing in this movie has diminished my love and respect for her. So, and he also, on the last note that Minister said, he said, in 2 years, it will be 50 years since the assassination of Brother Malcolm. At no time during these 48 years has the government opened the files on that murder and let the public see those files. He says, I've appealed to the government to open the files so that everything in those files could be made to manifest, not only to the Shabazz family and those families who were so illy affected by the murder, but also my family and the lives of those who are constantly put in public. So I'm going to open this up. I don't know who to begin with on this. But matter of fact, we'll let Kathleen, because we had this conversation. After all of that, I know from Ronnie's standpoint, she was just saying it was a good movie. It showed this, and a lot of people believed that Mr. Farrakhan had something to do with it. And I think that's a lowbrow way to deal with this. We need to be careful about what we put in the universe. So I just want to kind of ask Kathleen first.
Well, anyway, what I haven't seen it yet. I DVR'd it. I definitely plan to watch it, but I have not yet seen it. What I believe, what I thought Ronnie was trying to express, and not trying to defend anything, you know, professional style, which is the radio show, professional style is not taking any stand or, you know, is not standing behind any statements about this.
Yeah,
however,
you don't have to run a disclaimer. This is Black on Black Crime. You know, we all come here for the love of black folks, right? The name of this program is so that we don't distort reality. So you can go ahead. You don't have to run a disclaimer.
What I thought she was trying to say was that, you know, she wasn't saying that Minister Farrakhan was involved with his death, but what she was saying was that to her, what was represented in the movie was an accurate take on what was happening at the time. Well, yeah, she did say that, but I thought, because what she was saying, she began to talk about herself and where she was and what she was doing at the time, and I thought she was saying that was an accurate take on what was being said in the black community at the time. So if that was something that was being whispered in the black community, should they not put it in the movie, because that's just showing part of the history? Not saying that he did it, but that people were, you know, insinuating that he did. So I'm not trying to take any side on it, but just to kind of explain what I thought she was saying, and she's not here to say what she was saying, though.
Right,
so
right.
That's
kind of
it.
And there's nothing but love for Ronnie for that. She saw it, so I didn't. But she was just kind of explaining it. But let's go to Daniel. What do you think about that? Like, is there some reason for us to be concerned? Black History Month, you do a Betty and Coretta story, and you're not basing that on them knowing each other. You're putting together a story to tell people about what they must have been going through. Did not consult the family. But whatever they thought from Lifetime and their executive producer side, what they thought black people should know about these two ladies from their own research.
If you're going to tell the story accurately, I would suggest you consult people who knew the folks as opposed to something you may have read or bits and pieces of information. If you truly want to give the heart of the matter some thought and some introspection, talk to the family. So that I don't agree with. I mean, because if you want to say, again, you got two icons of the black community, two women who bear the brunt of losing their husbands tragically and had to live their lives or live out the extent of their lives having to bear this cross, if you will, why not ask the family what it was like? So
right.
I disagree with their premise.
Right. Low key?
I agree. I think the fact, and I watched it, and I thought it was, you know, it was interesting, it was entertaining, but I agree. If you're going to tell the story, tell the true story. And why not have the input from the family members? And as the daughter said, that her mother was not meek, she was strong, you know. She was a lot stronger than they portrayed her to be in the show. You know, so it's a fact or fiction thing is what it comes down to for me.
Well, again, for the network, Black History Month, they're telling a story that's giving us a perspective, right? People don't go through reading. Nobody's going to go through doing research. You never hear me say that. You need to go research it yourself. I never say that. I feel the responsibility on myself to be as accurate as possible when I speak. And I think that when you get in a bigger picture like that, Lifetime, I believe that there's kind of a motive behind that. That's just my personal belief. Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead.
I don't see many ultra strong. I mean, and I don't see Lifetime a lot, so I could be off base, but I don't see a lot of strong women portrayed there. I see a lot of women being victimized or being marginalized, and maybe in the end somehow they overcome, but I just don't see the strong images of women on Lifetime. But, I mean, you all can correct me on that if that's not the case.
I don't know. I think in life, that's Lifetime's tag. They're a network for women. Lifetime and Oxygen and those are women networks. I don't know. Here's a clip, and I want to say it was in 95. For those who did not know, and those people who did not go to the Million Man March, and for the people who are defending this movie, saying Betty Shabazz felt this way about the minister, Dr. Betty Shabazz spoke at the Million Man March, by the way. And here is a clip before the Million Man March where Dr. Betty Shabazz and Minister Farrakhan, they're at the Apollo, and this is the year before the Million Man March. But here's Minister Farrakhan talking about the government releasing the records, and I'll give you more detail after we come back from this clip about what prompted this. The family is asking the government to release the records on the death of Malcolm.
The government admits that it worked night and day to bring about a separation between Brother Malcolm X and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Once this division was accomplished, the government, by its own admission, had agents on both sides to manipulate the zeal and the ignorance inside the ranks of the Nation of Islam and among the followers of Brother Malcolm X to create the atmosphere that allowed him to be assassinated and the Nation of Islam to sustain wounds from which it has never recovered. Sister Betty Shabazz and her family has not recovered. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad's family has not recovered. My family has not recovered. The Nation of Islam has not recovered. And black people have not recovered from these terrible wounds. Our zeal, our love and hatred, our ignorance was manipulated by powerful outside forces. And the result is that members of the Nation of Islam were involved in the assassination of Malcolm X. And the nation has taken the heat and carried the burden of the murder of Malcolm X. We cannot deny whatever our part was. That is true. But we must not let the real culprit get away hiding his hand and keep us fighting and killing one another.
All right, now that is from the Apollo. Minister Farrakhan is, and Betty Shabazz is sitting right next to him. Charlie Rangel is there. There are a lot of prominent people at that speech. I didn't give all of it, but I can just tell it to you this way. During that time, and so let history reflect, during the time, Elijah Muhammad was the head of the Nation of Islam, and then his son, the third person in line at the Nation of Islam, was an FBI informant. And that is within the counterintelligence program. So whatever was being manipulated inside the Nation of Islam, the third person in charge of the Nation of Islam at that time wasn't Minister Farrakhan. He was sent to New York. He was running a mosque someplace. Not in New York, I'm sorry. He was sent to a mosque someplace else. I can't remember where it was sent. But the third in charge of the Nation of Islam is an FBI informant. So they're asking that the FBI, who knows what was going on behind the scenes and the conspirators in this, to come forth. Now, on blackamericaweb.com, there's an article by Gregory Kane, who wrote a story, and he asked, was this slander? He said, Nation of Islam leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan, is much better than I am. Farrakhan hasn't filed a lawsuit for slander against the producers of this television movie, Betty and Coretta, or against the executives of the Lifetime Network, but he could. He said, contributing to a climate of hatred is all Farrakhan has owned up to, and it's probably all that he's guilty of. This matter can be easily cleared up. All of the information about the rift between Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm X which the FBI took credit for the informant and the assassination, could be found in the counterintelligence or the Contel profiles. They know that that informant was telling them what was going on. So in the nature of black-on-black crime, we are just here to clear up some of this, just to say, don't run out there with these old stereotypes, knowing that all these years have passed, there's been more information out. Don't live in that moment by creating this division in the community for everybody to fight once again over something that we technically don't have the answer to. So Mr. Farrakhan said, I found out some things from Dr. Betty Shabazz that I didn't even know. He said we wasn't talking, so we didn't know what was going on their side, and they didn't know what was going on from ours. Everybody's just hating on each other from a distance. So, you know, it reminds me of our theme today with Django and all these other things, where black folks will get half of the story from one side or the other, and then we'll just start fighting. Loki, after listening to that clip, what do you think about that?
Oh, wow.
I mean, being at the Million Man March and seeing Betty Shabazz and all the nearly 2 million people there, what do you think about today trying to slander the whole impression of that whole time by doing a Lifetime movie so fluffy and light, putting Mary J. there, and then being like, oh, yeah, we want to point the finger at one individual, not the Nation of Islam per se, but just the individual. Black people won't stand up and say anything about it. But like I said,
well,
the news stories.
They were successful in – And the other part of this is, if I'm going to slander someone, I'm going to make comments or statements in a movie, I therefore wouldn't go out and consult with the family members, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And if you notice, a lot of what's being said is you don't see the family members coming out and saying, no, that wasn't the case, we didn't believe that, we didn't think that, we weren't told that. They're not saying that. They're just saying that their mothers weren't as weak as portrayed in the movie, or that Coretta did not necessarily believe what was said, you know, when they said about Martin being unfaithful, that she didn't necessarily believe all that based on the tape that was sent to her house.
Right.
So they didn't deny a lot of the stuff said about Minister Farrakhan, but, you know, I mean, you're right. Having that listening to that part you just played takes me back to the Million Man March, actually. And listening to Mr. Farrakhan and then listening to Dr. Shabazz.
Well, the family has come out. There was only one daughter that they said was kind of involved in the not really involved in the production. Nobody in the family saw the script. Nobody saw what was written. They only saw it after the fact. So nobody contributed to it. So the family did not, on both sides, did not like it. And what Gregory Kane was saying on his Black America Web article, and it goes into much more depth, that what can we say about other people stirring stuff up in the community, and what is the motivation for that? Is it just to keep us fighting, or what would be the bigger picture motivation? But
well,
the family didn't know.
Yeah. I mean, but that there's something to it that they weren't even consulted. I mean, they didn't bother to consult them. You know, I don't even think it comes down to consulting fees. You know, when you're going to slander someone or make comments, they made the comments. And this has not been a secret that people thought this, that they thought that he had something to do with it. And, you know, he didn't spend his life defending it. He made comments at certain times to deny it or, you know, put it out there. But, you know, to bring it all back right now at this time, I mean, it's still something we have to talk about, and that's our problem, is we don't talk enough about issues, and we don't get to a table where we can agree to disagree on such issues, because they're such strong and heavily impact issues, you know, as far as what we believe in our community, you know?
Yeah, and I didn't play the whole thing. Like, the whole thing is actually pretty long, but he did come out and say, I did not murder him. He said it in a long time ago in an interview,
right.
And in the interview he just did recently in the final call, he said the same thing. Ms. Farrakhan has said the same thing. He said, you have to remember, I love Brother Malcolm. He brought Minister Farrakhan into the nation. So he said, but the thing was, he said, I added to the climate with the hate speech that I was given, because they were given information from the CIA and from the FBI that was saying Malcolm was saying this, and they were responding to information. So Malcolm was responding to information that the FBI was giving him about the nation. So they were fighting over stuff that they neither one of them was really saying. And that's what he's saying. We were just being manipulated from being ignorant to what was going on. He said that's why it's important that we see exactly what they knew and what they were doing to create that climate. He's saying we were all wrong. He's saying the nation is wrong.
I stay open-minded on the whole thing. I, having watched Malcolm towards the end and listening, you know, and studying that whole thing, I take the point of I'm not sure. I'm not sure he didn't have anything to do with it, you know. And looking at the state of the nation of Islam when he was killed and how Elijah Muhammad was, I'm not sure. So I don't stand on the disbelief side of that.
Yeah, I understand that. And Daniel, did you want to comment on that? I kind of left Daniel out of this.
Oh, it's not a problem. Well, like you said, the whole thing about creating controversy, if you are truly going to misrepresent, then you're not going to ask the family because you already decided that this is how you're going to portray everyone. And this whole thing about pitting us against one another, that's an old trick, and we always fall for the okey-doke. And here the minister and the Shabazz family have been at odds for all these years and never really talked about and understood it. But wait a minute, they told us that y'all said this, and y'all said this, and this and that and the other. So in our communities even, go ahead,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. I was just going to say, in 95, they did talk. Betty Shabazz was with him on stage when that clip that I played.
That's what I was saying. As of that moment, up until that time, they had been at odds.
Right.
Until they actually had a chance to sit down and really talk about what really happened and really who said what.
Yeah.
And that goes to the bigger picture of what's going on even today. You know, if we don't continue to open up the lines of communication amongst ourselves,
that's right.
Anybody can plant a seed, and then there we go again, running around in circles, arguing with one another while things are happening around us.
Yeah, and Spike Lee definitely did capture this in the movie X, in Malcolm X's movie, when he said that Malcolm X said, this is bigger than the Nation of Islam. They don't have the capacity to do or the capability. He said, I trained them. I used to run their intelligence stuff. He said, the Nation of Islam can't do this. So at some point, Malcolm X, before he died, he said he knew that. So here's some internet comments that I thought was kind of interesting about the show. One of the comments said the person I'm most angry with are the actors like Mary J. Blige, that she could have seeked out the truth. We all know how people feel about, we know, especially white folks, and kind of how they said it, but they know how they feel about Minister Farrakhan. It's out in the open. I will not go see the movie. And why do we complain when we refuse to tell our own stories? If we begin to put our money where our mouth is, tell our history, we would be able to get the truth out there. And another comment said, what is being said is a diversion to distract from what we should really be paying attention to. You can bet your money that if they had anything that they could use against Minister Farrakhan, they would have used it a long time ago. Minister Farrakhan may not have pulled the trigger, but when he excommunicated Malcolm X, it was the same thing as pulling the trigger. He said he set him out there knowing the government would strike him dead, is what the other comment said. And he said he didn't like what the brother Malcolm X was saying nor was revealing. It's not about hating Farrakhan. It's about finding out and exploring the avenues to the truth. And the last comment said Dr. Shabazz spoke at the Million Man March, so it does appear that there was some movement towards reconciliation between Dr. Shabazz and Mr. Farrakhan. We have to think critically to see through propaganda. Now, Kathleen,
it was Elijah Muhammad that excommunicated, if you want to call it excommunicated, not Farrakhan.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
He was just one of the ministers who ran one of the temples.
Right.
He wasn't even high up on the food chart, actually. You know, I think it was because Elijah Muhammad was not a very good speaker, it's why he allowed Minister Farrakhan to speak. Because he brought Malcolm in, and he said to Malcolm, you know what, Malcolm's articulate, he's charismatic, and he went around the country and built the Nation of Islam. Malcolm X did that. So it seems kind of odd, and it was kind of dividing that house. Kathleen, you want to say?
Oh, no, I was just saying Malcolm. You know, I was agreeing with you saying that Malcolm was the one who did that. And, you know, I just wanted to highlight or rubber stamp, hype, whatever, the comment, not so much that, you know, I'm not sure whether the minister did it or didn't, but I'm not, my thought is that it's never bad to have the discussion, especially when some people are not, you know, people are not certain whether there was involvement or there wasn't involvement. So the minister himself is saying that he asked the FBI to open up their records and release the information that they were able to obtain by having an informant within the nation. No, I mean, we all – I'm sorry?
No, I just want to clear this up. It's not the information that they have. They were orchestrating this inside
right,
of the Nation of Islam.
Yeah, right, thank you. So, you know, he's saying himself that he wants them to open that up and release it so it can clear everybody. And I think that's a very vital thing to have happen because, you know, this was not so long ago that there are not people still alive today who have that thought in their minds. So to have this movie come out and say it again is because it was never it's never been properly put to bed. So we hear the minister, you know, nobody really wants to hear those accusations being spoken out loud against him, but there are people who still believe it, you know, and it was a part of our history. So, you
right.
know.
And that's why I believe, and Minister Farrakhan said this, there were some other internet comments I didn't get to. Again, and Gregory Kane's article on Black America Web explains this very thoroughly. If you do not understand or believe or just generally understand that if the government had any information to link him to that, believe me, before the Million Man March, his butt would have been in jail. Don't believe at one moment. So I am not even inclined to entertain the thought that it was possible that he could be there, because if the FBI had those facts, they would have done him a long time ago. Now, we're talking with him and Dr. Betty Shabazz. 18 years has passed since they were trying to press the government to release those records. And the reason they won't is because they're knowing from the records that were released that Gregory Kane wrote about. From those records, they know who the informant was. The FBI said that we were three places away from running the Nation of Islam. The FBI said that. So they were orchestrating stuff inside the Nation of Islam that we have no clue about. So for me to blame the minister for it is crazy on all accounts for me. Whatever doubts that we have, I can guarantee you one thing, and I am absolutely certain, and this is just my intuitiveness, but I'm absolutely certain Ms. Farrakhan didn't have anything to do with it because his butt would be in jail. And that's my two-minute commentary. I just thought I'd share that. So we're not – you're listening to Black on Black Crime on ACN, on S3 Radio. We're here. You know, I didn't want to leave on such a bad note. But, you know, we started running a little bit over. We'll pick up. We'll continue on more Black on Black Crime later. Daniel, brother, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for joining in. And
as
next
always,
time you,
thanks for having me.
And I'm going to give you permission now to we need a backup. Not a commissioner, but somebody to review the plays when our commissioner goes off the rails. So since the commissioner went off the rails on us, we got to get her back up. And since Kai wasn't here, we got to get her back up too. And Brother Loki, of course.
No doubt.
You know, so yeah, good show today. And Kathleen, she must have put us on mute. I was expecting her to respond to that.
Yeah, that was a low blow. That was a low blow.
That was a black on black crime.
I'm being quiet because I don't want to commit a black on black crime on your show on you.
She is not.
You know,
I
have to say, sometimes I just hear bias towards you, Kathleen.
Huh?
Sometimes I have to say I just hear bias towards you. I don't know what it is, you know.
I feel a mutiny coming on.
I know she don't flag a brother, so I'm good. I'm good.
I know. See, none of y'all get flagged. It's just me. Is it just me? Kathleen hasn't been flagging anybody. So, Kathleen.
I think she understands. I think it might just be you. I don't know.
Yeah, it may be just me. I can live with that.
Yeah,
right. I can live with that. So Kathleen, nobody's jumping on Kathleen. But for Kathleen, Daniel, Lowkey, everybody here, thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next week on Black Crime.
Hey.
All right, people.
Later. West Side.
Okay, we didn't hear Kathleen. Kathleen. All right. We had to get a shout out for her. She must have dropped us. All right.
All right.
We'll see you next week.
Good luck. Good show.
All right.